You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are ya?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 31st of August and to the 6th of September 2020, with the exception of the three things that we'll talk about right now, such as Super Shiro, episode 47, The Big Watermelon, Truth in Advertising.
Pulling out all the stops in the political episode.
I was getting really sad at the preview. I was like, oh, it's not going to be one more. Huh.
Well, get ready to get sad at the final episode next week.
Yeah.
So this time, the Boba Bone is a watermelon. So Shira goes to investigate. And it's the usual bit of walk chase. But somehow Dekapu is catching up with Shiro a lot quicker this time.
Also, he's so handsome. What is happening right now?
Just doing his long strides. Oh, yes. This is out for a walk. I'm going to become president of the world. A sniff, 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 sniff. Gonna fight him hands in a bone. A sniff, 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 sniff.
And what he has done is he's tired of being shrunk all these many episodes. He has built himself a ray beam which will allow you to alter your size. He's altering his own size, but it turns out whatever you shot it at will have its size altered depending on what the setting is. And he's made himself longer, so he's got big long legs. Shiro initially thinks he's just been working out, but it turns out it's just this beam. So then Shiro thinks, oh yes, this S on my chest, it means small, so surely I can alter this to make myself large. And then we get the various settings that Dekapu discovered when he was being the superhero a few episodes back. And eventually finds the large one, which makes him massive and fluffy, as well as tall and wide.
Had to go to a long neck one. Had to go to the chopper's kung fu pose partway through.
Dekapu is annoyed at this, so he's going to make himself bigger. But the beam doesn't come out at first, and by the time it does come out, it hits the watermelon.
It's like the cartoon thing of him like slapping the gun and then looking it in the eye kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes. And then Shiro gets the watermelon, and so Dekapu's going to make himself incredibly big because he's now not big enough to get the watermelon. And then he zaps the watermelon again, but this time it's set on infinite largeness, so the watermelon will keep on growing. So Shiro has to keep on growing, and it's just a bunch of cartoon escalation. Very fitting to your background on YouTube, Dwayne. As things eventually get so far out of hand that Super Shiro is so tall that he has broken through the atmosphere and has to use another one of his powers, Super Breath, which allows him to hold his breath long enough to survive in space and get this watermelon off the planet Earth before Earth itself becomes a watermelon.
I'm up here, I could just like throw this thing across the space police HQ anyway. Don't need to go to that whole rigmarole.
Well, that's not what happens, though. What happens is Shiro stares at this giant watermelon and starts salivating.
I want to take a bite out of it, but if I do that, I'll let up my oxygen. This is tough.
Well, I'm a dog, so I'm going to take a bite out of it. And when he tries to take a bite, he then has to take another breath, and that sends the watermelon flying. And Shiro's like, well, I've saved the Earth at least, even if I didn't find the Boba Bone.
He did technically save the Earth this time. As usually he says, and the Earth is safe once again. It's like, he didn't do anything. It wasn't the Boba Boba Boba.
They protected it. He stopped a dog becoming president.
I still think he'd be a good president.
I think you're right, yes.
It's the media, which with the Super Shiro propaganda, make me believe is some kind of boogeyman out to get you. He's got some good ideas, this dog.
Yeah.
But the kind of, I guess, quota is him looking in the sky. Is like, if you ever see a watermelon in the sky, that's that watermelon that I set into Earth's orbit. don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah. This is one of the things I sort of wish it had happened in an earlier episode, earlier in the series. So then so you'd see you look up around. In the sky at night. It's like when they keep the face thing destroying the moon. It still remains for later episodes. It's going to be very hard for the space to cover this one up, I think. Which is probably good. This is almost the last episode.
And then it turns out that, yes, he said it's flying so far that it flies past the satellite. I forget her name. Like, we do get to see her again.
Bebo?
Something like that, yes.
Bebo or Bebo. MySpace.
Then we've got brand new animal, BNA, episode 10, Rabid Wolf. I guess I was wrong about there not being more exposition to come.
More lies.
It's not as much exposition, but it is lying exposition. It's clearly like this is the way it is.
I think it's half truths, I think is what it turns out to be.
Yeah, that's probably more appropriate. Yeah.
So the mink is selling some cigars to a horse, and the horse is annoyed that over half these cigars are carrots.
This is more the show I thought it would be, with a mink trying to pull a scam on a horse. I'm just like, I thought it was going to be this kind of show, but it was like, no, we got serious stuff to do. So I was glad to get these little things in at the start.
Yeah,
here's the picture. That's what was in it.
You can see the carrots behind the cigars. So, but this causes him to go into a furious rage that causes him to horse Hulk out.
Yes,
I do like the design of like the multiple toes, but they all have hooves. That was pretty cool.
That was creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
Appreciate that, but creepy.
Mm.
And this is spotted by Shiro and Michiru because they're literally just the other end of the street.
Small town.
Yeah. And so they intervene and they do the same thing they did last time. Pick him up, take him to the docks.
They have their own fastball special.
Yeah, they have their own maneuver.
Fly up real high and drop him from a great height. That'll sort it out.
Drop him in the factory. I'll beat him up. I'm not going to kill him this time. I'm going to try and take him alive. But it's a good plan.
But then interrupted by definitely not Tachikomas. These entirely different things.
I was thinking halfway between Tachikoma and Mousers from Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a bit. I suppose because they just spring out of the ground like that.
And there's lots of little ones. At least they look little initially, that kind of way. And the mayor is getting the call in. It's like, oh, there's a new wild beast man, but the guys are handling it cool. And then she gets a call from the guy at the head of the corporation. And she's like, I'm a little busy right now, Alan. Can you call me back? And he's like, no, actually, I'm calling about that. Coincidentally. And then they get invaded by the... Did they get a name, those drones? I'm not sure.
Medibot was all in my mind. Yeah. That big red cross on them.
Mm-mm.
No, Medibot, no.
They get back to... They follow the robots, and it takes them to the Medi-Center. And Shiro's going to like charge straight in, but Shiro's like, no, when I was here last, I found a way we can sneak in. You don't have to just...
And she's saying, it's like, I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to fuck off because you're like, I'll take care of this. Get away from Shiro. And she's like, no, you're going to go crazy on him. So I'm going to hang around to make sure you don't lose your shit. Which seems like they're kind of working like partners, which is why they kind of snap away from that later. It was a good way to set up that. It's like, oh, they actually work really well together. They even got a standard way to deal with these monsters. It's like, yeah, but they still are contrary in various opinions as well.
Yeah, then they break in and they leads to a confrontation. They're surprised that there's only humans here. They get surrounded by the guards, who I love, basically animal control people.
With the sharp,
they have the little nooses.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Alan calls them off and they go to have an exposition dump.
Sorry about earlier, we tranked out the horse dude and brought him in, but my other robots, they mistook you for other rampaging beastmen, so they fired upon you. Yeah, but real bullets. Oh, I wasn't around, so They must have got mistaken.
It was automatically put out by my men. It won't happen again. I'll make sure they're just filled with tranks from now on.
Why do you have real bullets to begin with?
Yeah. It's his story is so fucking full of holes, and yet he seemingly explains it everything away to the point where it's like, hey, Shiro, you know your backstory. It's not the way you think it is, bro.
Humans. How could humans have guns or explosives have defeated beastmen 1,000 years ago? It doesn't make any sense, dude. Sounds like when we got there, beastmen had already run rampage on each other and they just fucked each other up. So we just came along and we're just defending ourselves, man.
So his thing is, if you get too many different types of beastmen in one environment, they go a bit crazy. And that's what happened 1,000 years ago. That's what's going to happen in this city now. So we're just trying to keep them calm up till the point where we can use this thing that turns beastmen back into humans, or into humans if they hadn't been humans before.
I don't know. Sounds an awful lot like you're inventing a problem and then trying to sell us the treatment for it. No.
Yeah.
Just remember, they're not going to call this this condition neurovascular syndrome. Just, emblematic of the city that you were born in. And that's like a millennia ago.
Mm. Oh, also, I'm the ancestor of that guy in the opposing army.
Oh, yeah. I was a bit rolling my eyes at that. It's like, oh, of course you are. Oh, of course you are. Which means this is going back to some ancient grudge you have against beastmen, obviously. Not some kind of benevolent, magnanimous thing, is it?
Yeah.
When does he lose his temper?
He's having none of it.
Yeah.
There's some upper limit of bullshit, of lies that he's just like, that's fucking bollocks. I mean, like at the whole time he's explaining, he has a bunch of robots with tranquilizer guns trained on him. It's like, hey, whoa, I just don't want you to go crazy, bro. It's like, well, then don't be pointing guns at him. That's probably not a good thing. But yeah, he kind of loses his shit, decides to wreck up the place.
I think it's when precisely when it's just to say, oh, we're going to disperse this among the population because, there are maybe beastmen here who want to be human. For instance, what's fucking wrong with being a beastman?
Well, he's also saying we're going to experiment on this horseman just to make the cure.
The key to it being a problem that Alan has created is that when he's describing what's happening, Mitchell is like, oh, like the church, which, yes, that makes sense to them as that's being the factor which is causing it to happen because it's changed the makeup of the culture. But we know that Alan is actually behind that as well.
Yeah. I mean, from the mayor's understanding, I'm guessing it's like the reason Alan is involved with the church is that's helping keep beastmen calm, which is stopping them hulking out. If they just pray to Beastman Jesus, then they won't be as likely to fly off the handle kind of thing.
Yeah, it's fairly simplistic because, this city has been up and running for about 10 years now. And like any city, has got problems with crime and inequality, but that's going to happen in any city in the world. The whole Beastman aspect is kind of secondary to everything else. But what's changed recently? Oh, yeah, all that's happened. People, they were getting on for grand as well as it could be for the last 10 years. And then this new thing is introduced and suddenly this has actually been a deep-rooted problem that's only been exposed now. I think, I don't know about that. They'd be squaring off against each other in the streets. Hey, get up. You took my place in the queue. I'm going to hulk out into a big bull man and mess you up. But it won't turn into that 20-foot-tall monster things. So, what's going on with that? But Mitri was like, oh, no, he's just trying to offer, he's trying to help, he's trying to offer a cure. That's what I thought you'd say. You're just you're not a beast man at all, you're a human. You wouldn't know what I've been through, man. You don't know my life.
While he's trying to tear the horse beast man out of that, he's kind of laying into her where, you don't know what it's like to be a beast man. You just want to go back to being human. You only care about yourself kind of thing. And then she's giving him shit. It's like, dude, you got a 1,000-year-old grudge against humans. So it just blinded you to everything else. And the thing is, it's like, the problem is she's coming across as super naive because that motherfucker's up to shit.
Yes.
It's like, even if Shiro isn't correct entirely in this situation, he is like, yeah, this motherfucker's up to shit. He's correct on that point, and that's the one we need resolving.
Which is the key as to the character who shows up at the end, who has also figured out that motherfucker is up to shit. Mm-hmm. Hey, Shiro, would you like to get inside my car?
Yeah.
which is Flip, the gangster. So that's when Shiro, the cops come to arrest Shiro, and Shiro's like, well, the cops are like, don't make us fight you. And that just convinced Shiro not to fight them, and he just legs it instead.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to fight Beastmen still. So
yeah, Mirror was his aide, just like, comes along, I just want to talk to him, they have this conversation on a boat, and the Mirror's saying, yeah, the situation is escalating like beyond my wildly. I think it's probably for the best. I'm going to talk to the Prime Minister of Japan. And
yeah, she checked Alan's data. It's correct. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably fucking fixed, the one you fucking read as well. Yeah, but she's going to talk to the Prime Minister. They're actually going to set up different Beastman communes, so they're not as mixed in different species of Beastman, therefore less likely to do it. But we need to keep it quiet, otherwise the humans will freak out if they find we can turn into giant monsters. And if that doesn't work out, we'll have the thing that turns them into humans. And she's like, and Shiro's like, what the fuck? That you can't want them to do that. And he can see from her pained expression, is like, that's the like worst case scenario, basically.
I'm going to guess, based on Promare, is that Alan isn't necessarily fixing it. Is that I'm going to guess that his research is right, but his solution is selfish.
Yeah. He's probably like, you. It's like, hey, this is actually a problem potentially, but he's just using it in order to profit from.
Any pharmaceutical company, why would you try and develop a cure for any disease when and just like have a one-off sale when you could develop a treatment for it and then just keep getting money off of that?
Except, of course, this is literally a one-off sale. So then the question is, okay, what is his benefit in removing, turning Beastmen into humans?
Presumably, his benefit is he can turn humans into Beastmen, and he already has two successful cases of that. So he controls it, I imagine it's just like, hey, I got super soldiers. Here is your super soldier serum.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can cause him to run amok like that, and then you need a treatment for it. So you can just...
you can infect a native population with that.
You can destabilize things in the background, and then, again, you're solving the problem you've created or exacerbating in the first place. In the front, and which are legitimate business.
Anyway, also there's going to be a concert.
Maybe we should gather all these people all together in one place and make them, de-stress them a bit. Mm. Not any kind of venue where we could dose a wide section of the population with an experimental agent that turns them into mutants.
Our friend showing up and then saying, it's like, hey, this is the last secret, but you're in on it now, so we can be cool now. Sorry, I had to keep it secret from you, but we had to keep the people on the inside, but you're on the inside now, and I can tell you all my secrets. Maybe all of them. I don't know. Tee-hee. And I'm just like, okay, either you're lying or that's like just a teenager-y kind of joke. Also, you don't know everything that's going on, motherfucker.
She thinks she's like in control of this, of her own situation, but she's just a player in this herself.
Yeah.
Thinks she's doing good. Only just knows as well that they have the little kind of like clasping the hands together, for the religion. Only just knows because the koala lady who runs the Beast Co-op is bringing them in, like, some tea or something like that. And her hands are full. She's just saluting. Oh my gosh, I didn't know the Silver Wolf was here. My apologies. No, like, be the best Beastman you can be, and saluting you. Or you just notice that when you do it one hand, it's a little kind of like throwing the horns up sort of move that a lot of idols do. I thought, you just put two of those together and made that your sign of prayer.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a thing in the idea before, but I do like that design, that it could be like a thing you throw up in a concert. In an idol type situation. That's a fun design.
Anyway, not enough Jackie in this episode. I hope she's back in the remaining episodes.
Yeah. I think even the fact that they just use the same maneuver, and I think it might drop down, at least if not the same warehouse, than the one next door to it. Well, let's do this over again. Like, okay. Whatever.
It feels kind of reusing it, but I'm guessing the purpose of it is to make it look like, they have the situation under control, they have a routine, and then to break that routine and the mayor getting, I'm going to say kidnapped?
Yes, gets kidnapped by the Prime Minister. I think basically just preventing her from going back to Anima City.
Yeah,
he's not trying to kill her, he's just trying to fuck over her plan, because the mayor is like, no, I'm all for this this drugs plan rather than the relocation plan.
Hmm.
I like having them all in one place. It's very convenient for him.
Yeah. Mm. This does feel
it's becoming quite more apparent now that, yeah, they're kind of tapping into that X-Men thing more. Being a mutant is an allegory for this, which is, you know, as we have talked about, the kind of the maybe simplicity to take of it, but it still is a good way to try and understand and parse some of what's going on here, because you can see why Shearer was mad, because he's been a Beast Man, you know, he's been black, he's been gay, he's been so about that all of his life, or longer part of his life. And Mitru was only kind of found out about her recently. She only found out that she was gay, that she was X, Y, or Z, recently. Yeah. And because she's sort of new to it, it's like she just said she doesn't count.
As a culture, it's not really much of a thing. So you could just throw it away and be normal. And what's the problem? Yeah, you can read it like that.
It's not like that, yeah. Mm. And as well, it's fair to say that, all of these people congregate in the cities together so much, and the response of each other, that's what's causing all of this, all the strife and all this unrest, right? Not because of the fact that these are people from separate cultures and might be kind of fighting out and sharing things with each other and seeing that, hey, this king seems to kind of fucked up and stacked against us. Maybe we should speak up about that. That's translated. Oh, it's a problem. All this unrest. You can't have all these people like living together. It's unnatural. You can't have this country, this nationality, living this nationality. It doesn't make any sense. This is kind of like thing. You know, they aren't happy enough when they're all confined to the one ghetto, to the one city. It's just like no. And when we do that, it causes them to like band together and just like camaraderie. We can't have them that. Now we got to break up together. We got to gentrify it or pave it over somehow. Again, these are very simplistic views. I think it is like, you know, some of the kind of nuanced things, but I do appreciate that it is trying to say something about the world we live in.
Say like a simplistic, cartoony version of that. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people are maybe over. I've talked about before, reaching a bit, expecting this to be the thing that mirrors their self beliefs like perfectly down to the last detail. Like, I think it shouldn't expect that of it, but. I think appreciate that it is trying to make some effort towards that.
Sure.
Let's see if they can land it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. My feeling, as particularly because there's another show, guess is that it's 10th episode this week, and I feel that does a much better job of depositing your its villain ready for the remainder of the series. Mm. Whereas it feels like this is just like, okay, we've known from the start that Alan seems untrustworthy, but we still don't know why. We've only got 2 episodes left. So that's going to mean more exposition at some point.
Yeah, it's definitely handling that a lot clunkier, for sure.
And admittedly, I'm going to guess that his motivations are going to be a lot more complicated than guilty cigars.
I mean, like, sometimes a simple fucking motivation is just like, well, I don't need any fucking explanation of that, really.
Yeah, I think that the advantage of Parry Radman has is he's being written by the director, and so therefore he knows what's going to work in a cartoon better than necessarily somebody who doesn't actually draw. But normally, Nakashima's fine. I think it might be the weakest thing I've seen of his in terms of a straight script of his.
It's not a terribly bad show.
Just those first 8 episodes are being let down by the last 2 episodes we've watched.
Yeah, very much so.
They'll both put it back. At least it will be some kind of stunt-filled action spectacle at the very end. Well, I guess people will have to learn to get along. I don't know how, though, but we'll just kind of face the future together. Without offering any real answer or coming down on anyone's side about this solidly, but
it doesn't need to offer an answer that fixes our society in reality. It does need to offer us a fucking kick-ass animation.
Yes, and I believe the 12th episode
have done those. So
Kibayashi storyboards. So I think there's a decent chance of that.
Yeah.
Just want to see you punch the man. That's what we really came here for.
Yeah.
Get him.
Next up is The Great Pretender, episode 3, LA Connection, part 3, in which we're introduced to Anderson, who I guess is supposed to be enough clues that he's a scumbag cop, as we immediately see him getting burgers and asking if the server speaks English. And then when he gets back, he's given everybody the wrong burger. He's not got the burger he wanted. And then when someone offers to swap burgers, he just hurls it across what he's got across the room.
Hitting some other guy in the back, yeah.
Yeah, and constantly referring to our hero as the Asian.
Like, I when I see that thing come up in Netflix that they forget to put on the first few episodes, I was like, violence, threat, racial discrimination, and all this fucking shit come up. I'm just like, oh, am I going to have a bad time with this show? It's just like, No,
it's just
front-loading it just for even the slight amount of those things. Yeah,
and then it kind of...
I thought that anime Crazy Nelson would be a lot nicer.
Yes.
I suppose not.
And then it rewinds a bit to see how the situation ended up the way it was at the end of the last episode.
Hmm.
As the we learn of the next con, which is, why don't I watch this guy's films and pretend to be a fan?
I thought that was really good, like his prep for the start of the day we saw at the end of the last episode, where, yeah, I just spent a night watching Steven Seagal movies.
Yes.
Mm.
That was pretty good. I was just like, that's... Okay, yeah, your man plays the con like I'm a big important guy, but he plays the con like small and personal.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of thing he's working with.
And I think the mistake Loron makes is Loron is going after scumbags who he thinks are scumbags, whereas Makoto has identified the human part of Eddie Cassano. He's realised that Eddie Cassano is these making of films, like funding, producing films, is not a put on. He actually, these are the things he loves.
He believes in them.
Yes. And so that's his way in to Eddie's life. At which point I was like, oh, this is a better sequel to Get Shorty than Be Cool was.
The secondary part that I really like about his cons is, besides like doing, that personal level stuff, is he brings a personal aspect of himself and like... changes it slightly, or sometimes doesn't change it at all. Like, he, when he's talking to your man, he's like, I just was sick of fucking Japan, man. He's taking that feeling about his life in Japan and bringing it into his performance. But also, he thinks those Steven Seagal movies are really fucking neat. So that's a benefit.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't seem like it very much like he'll watch them and learn about them, but it's like, and Fane being like the lifelong fan. But he seemed to get really into them when he was like saying all this to Laurent and Abby later on. It's like, actually, it wasn't bad. Like, when Razzie jumps
it's
in, he's
pretty
like,
good.
Fights that dude with the chopsticks, it's class.
And particularly the bit when we get the flashback again from last episode of Abby saying it's everyone for themselves, which is obviously what has motivated him to do this. It's like, that is so, it's so much like an Elmore Leonard plot at this point, where you've got the people who are ostensibly working together, but they've all got their own game going on separate to each person.
Yeah, each of them does it very differently. He does the personal thing, like finding the personal thing to connect with the target, the mark, and the personal thing of himself that he puts into it. Your man thinks he's above and better than everyone else, and she pretends emotional involvement, but actually is emotionally completely uninvolved. Coming out from very different angles, yeah.
Yeah, and Makoto as well understand that, you know, well, I got to work this angle myself, but I also need these two to keep the con going, so I need to draw them back in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And think that's great from there. Particularly the bit, I like the bit when basically Eddie welcomes Makoto into the family. It's like,
initial plan of going to the airport and like pretending that he was going to run away so that he can get caught to make it more natural that he'd be drawn to him, like, and putting himself in that vulnerable position. And then, like, it's like, you're one of us now, kid. And it's just like, oh, he actually like warmed his way completely in.
But that's only really because Eddie's got his next part of Eddie's plan is to not take the recipe.
There's all kinds of con men in this. Oh, so good.
Eddie's next part of the plan is that he doesn't want the recipe. He wants the scientist, because Makoto is the guy who can make the best versions of these drugs. So, hey, Makoto, I'll give you all that money you want, twice as much as I agreed with Laurent. But you need to make an example of the drug right now in my drugs factory. Also, we've got to go to a different location because the cops are spying on us. And, oh, it turns out the cop is actually in my pay.
Love that reveal, because, like, it's, you know, we'll send out one car, they'll chase after that one, we'll come out in a car. Oh, no, we're actually being chased by him. We got to make this look good. They do a cool car chase. It was actually pretty good for a CG one.
It wasn't bad, yeah.
The cars had real weight moving around. I like that.
It's also seeing aspects of inside the car as they were getting thrown around it.
You've seen a lot of reaction shots, yeah.
Laurent and Makoto are like, oh shit! And then Abigail is just like, whoa, yeah, this is class.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's actually excited or just putting that on for the character.
Probably the role that she plays. But yeah, and then your man ringing him up is like, hey, you didn't die in that car crash, did you? And at that point, it was like, oh, this guy's also running scams because the guy who's been chasing him for years and hasn't caught him is on his payroll. That's why he hasn't been caught. And I was like, that's really nice. And then him going like, no, make the drug for me right now. We'll all watch. Yes. Go for it.
Then meanwhile, Anderson gets back to his surveillance location where he finds an entirely new person in there and all his men angrily looking at them. And it turns out the FBI are here to take over the case.
Special Agent Paula Dickens, yes. At your service.
What the Dickens? I think that should be the catchphrase, right?
Might know me from my reputation. I caught that one dude. And also the other dude.
I shut down that crime family. I shut down this crime family. By the way, I know you're on the take, but don't worry, I let you take the credit. You just keep pretending to be on his payroll, but you're working for me because, hey, your daughter's studying overseas, right? And you wouldn't want to go to jail and your family to go to jail, right? Okay, cool. You're working for me now. And it's just like, people playing people. I love it.
Yeah, we should mention Kudo and Kim Si-won also show up in this episode.
Oh, yes.
Playing scientists when...
That was really good. Yeah.
It was really good. It was like fun. Like, Makoto, he's a smart dude. He would have taught all this thing to you. He would have taught that Eddie is going to, want to check this out, make sure he's on the level. And,
Send some guys to Japan to check in on your medical facility. Is Dr. What's it, whatever his fake name is, in the residence. And... Wouldn't you know his assistants are there because he's away on holiday right now. And they talk about all the pictures that they put up. I was like, that's a very good Photoshop job you've done several times.
checks out. Okay, go.
And they just clear out. Your man just walks notices in. Like, have they moved my desk?
Move my desk.
It's so funny the way they just roll into some places, house or office, when they're not there and then just fuck off straight away.
Not this comparable, was it? A little bit of tension there. It's like, oh, they're going to find them. They're going to find it out. It's like, what's up?
You lost you there for a moment.
That's me, like a smidge of Argo, where there's that really tense, fun scene at the end of the airport where it's just like, come on, pick up the phone. And then John Goodman's got to rush in and like pick up the phone so that they know that. They're a real production company. So that their passports are checked out.
And so they managed to convince Eddie that they need a much cleaner drug lab.
Oh, we Japanese are meticulous and clean. And we like working in small spaces, not this huge factory space. And Eddie's just like, we'll refurbish the whole thing. You'll stay tonight at my house. It's like,
Salazar's house, but it's specifically
Sorry, it is Salazar's house. He has to sleep on the couch.
Salazar's got a spare room, he'll mind after you.
He doesn't have a spare room. He's staying in Salazar's room. He's like, don't touch my stuff.
It his room, though? Because there appears to be like a teddy bear on the side.
He does say he's sleeping on the couch, though.
He does, yes. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. I assume what is going on will be clear in the next episode.
Sure.
I assume Salazar's going to get worked in the next episode based on what I'm reading here.
He's been set up nicely enough.
It has because we know that he used to be a mob boss and he's had to come down to working as a bodyguard for Eddie. So there's probably some sort of wedge which can be wedged in there to further work.
And if you spend Salazar the night in his house in a Eddie, very personal room with personal information, you might learn some way to play him.
Yeah. But that's where we leave it. Him wondering how on earth he's going to get to sleep in this man who's beating him up at the start of the episode's house. Not just his house, what is apparently his bed, even though the visual clues suggest something else is going on.
It's just... great way to keep it rolling along. Because I know that these cons only last like four or five episodes, it's putting me in mind of what they did with the last series of Lupin the Third, where they had, like, it was just capable, but it's only going to be across this stretch of episodes, but it ties into a larger thing later on. Like, okay, that's precisely I enjoyed so much about that. It just had these little chunks of it. It didn't seem like you're getting bogged down too much. When you get tired of one story, you're occasionally going to move on to a new one. That's keeping me going on here. It's like, oh, I know it's going to be like a big payoff for this now. And just because it's about con artists, it's like, you know, it's going to be viewed at the end. Remember episode 2, the little thing that you weren't paying attention to? That was the key to the whole thing or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But that's fine. As long as it's seeded and it's fair and was there to begin with, then I'm fine. Like, oh, you got me. I was the mark all along.
Yeah, I liked how they humanized Eddie Casado a lot in this episode from the previous two.
They made him look not like a fool. They made him look like a guy who actually cares about stuff other than organized crime.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was probably would be a nice way to like then make him threatening again later.
As you're reminded,
yes, he's a guy who kills, who we know has killed loads of people, and he doesn't necessarily have that much care for human life. We just care about his movies. We've got that in.
It's about manly expression.
Talking of manly expression, what better manly expression is there than the Olympic Games in ancient Greece? So it's Extra Olympia Kyklos, episode 15, Market of Dreams, in which we are confronted with the conundrum, how do we get people to come to our Tortonia Olympia?
Yeah, because the mayor busts in and is like, hey, we got to get people to come to this fucking thing. I got a water plan, so you fucking do it. You're the head of the office because I wrote it over the door.
And he's like, another war? And he's like, oh, don't worry, nobody will die in this one.
It's only a small one. We'll be done in 5 minutes, the grand.
Small skirmish. How do I get the word out? How do I tell the whole country about these games we're putting on? If only something would happen right now to inspire me. Whoa!
Well, you just have the line, if I knew how to do that, more people would be watching this anime. So yes, he ends up back in the professor's house, and the professor is very quick to explain that what he's looking for is commercials. Here, I'll put the TV on, and we see a couple of commercials, and Demetrius is very impressed, and so he decides he's going to take the television back in time with him.
We just yanked it out of the wall. You just, like, snipped the wire out and everything. It's like, no, put that down.
Dude, I haven't finished my payments on that. No. Yeah. And also, it'll be one TV to show the whole of Greece, so that doesn't make sense. That's not how it works.
I do like how nobody ever mentions that you would not be able to power it either. It's like all these other
There's so much reasons. Wrong with it. Yeah.
Here he's like, here, come out on the street with me. And then they see a guy in a sandwich board. And
he's like a human sign.
He is. Gives Demetrius a great idea. And it is a great idea. Basically, they put advertising for their Olympics on the shields of their warriors that are sending off to this skirmish.
So you go to war and you're just like, hey, check out the Olympics at Tortinia. And it's everyone's just like, oh, there's an Olympics in Tortinia, huh? And the mayor likes it because the word is spreading through each and every war that they have. And they're selling out, they're giving out free shields with ads on them as well. So it's spreading in other people's wars. And Demetrius is happy because it really puts a damper on all the wars. Everyone's just like, oh, all this advertising has really put me off all the beating people's heads. In.
Well, the guys we see are like, we've got to save our energy for the Olympics. But then a guy shows up in a green toga and he's like, hey, what's this all about your Olympics? We've got the real Olympics. You can't go around calling your Olympics the Olympics.
Hey, it's patent pending, copyright. We can't call it Olympics. Oh, no, you read it wrong. It's the
Tolympics.
Yes.
You know, Tortonia, you know, that's where we are, Tortolympics. That's what it's all about. Really?
Good I do like, because that's very much a satire on the modern Olympic Committee. They really don't want anybody using the word Olympics who has not given them money.
Well, that's probably why it's called Extra Olympia, not Extra Olympics, Guy Class.
If you remember it after the place, you can't get mad at us.
That's a place.
Yeah. That's going to be about, you know, celebrating, you know, the athletic ability of people around the world. But like anything, it becomes about making money for ourselves.
Yep.
So, yes.
Advertising is appropriate in that regard, Jim.
Well, that's okay. Come down to the Olympics. You can get anything you want. According to the song, we got books. We got the latest plays by Herodotus. You can get that latest work by that one sculptor. It's all down there. Established 776 BC.
Oh, they have sports.
Yes.
It's going to be a big thing on the main stage later on with some soldiers and sports and guys doing things. Oh, right, crass. It's just like it's totally like department store promotional video. And you're complete with nightmarish CG characters.
I really like the guy who like nods and then points at it and just reusing that over and over. I was just like, yeah, this is really funny.
Yeah, it's a lot of the cheapest... stock footage CG they could find. Yes,
the stock footage is great, the stock CG is great, the song is great. Yeah.
I pretty like that guy, you know, with like, what are you selling or what are you buying, and the guy is flashing a wad of notes like, oh yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's always just a highlight of the week.
I
can't remember if there is evidence of like money corrupting the ancient Olympics. I'm sure there is.
It probably is.
Yeah. I know they found stuff of like fixed gladiatorial stuff in Rome. Because I know that was coming up on the Wrestling Observer board a few years back. People trying to figure out like when was the earliest fixed martial arts contest.
So
like,
wrestling has always been fake.
Not always, but it has been for a long, long time.
Just gotta find the right pot and interpret that.
Yes,
however you choose.
But I'm sure somebody, in ancient Greece figured out there'd be ways of making money by deciding ahead of time who was going to win a particular wrestling match.
I mean, like pretty soon after gambling was invented, I assume gambling fixing was invented.
Yeah, exactly.
It must be. Yeah, I mean, this is like a modern thing. No, it's just much more elaborate. Is it though? Because this is about doing what we've always done for the entirety of history. It's just trying to play in the person opposite you for personal gain at their expense.
Mm. But so far, I'm unaware of somebody using their magical martial arts powers to create clones of contestants in order to take their places to fix a high school martial arts tournament.
It might be a modern invention.
It might be. And this is what happens in God of High School, Episode 9. Curse! Cornered! It's Lu Bu!
Lu Bu!
We were waiting for him, all right.
He arrived. I'm pleased. I figured he was arriving this episode as soon as it started going badly, and we'd already had a couple of episodes go about how can you gain these powers. And I was like, well, this was one of the situations they described.
Yeah, but also because Mira is stuck because these two idiots fucking messed up with their own situations. I got to take on this team myself. I got at least to win the first match myself.
We can't even win the first match quickly. Like slow it down because we need to get our second guy in because you're banned from doing matches. So we need to win two of the three matches that we'll do, but we only have two guys. So we have to win both matches.
Yeah, the first dude is a slippery customer, literally, because he's this oiled-up swimmer dude, and she's trying to, like, do a strike slam, but it keeps, like, sliding off of his rippling, oiled-up body.
Mm.
And think, okay, well, that's tricky enough, but I can probably like, take this dude out, so I got all the moves. But he's got something else going on, because he knows how to use swords as well.
And also, he's got her sword.
Yeah, it's just like it's tossed into the ring, the one before, that's all like heirloom is handed down. So that's like an old pretty nice wooden sword, right? Wrong! Secretly, it's some kind of space sci-fi fantasy sword. Which only
it's like a yin-yang sword. Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
And like he kind of really rubs it in where, you know, I think he gets knocked out of his hand or something like that, and he kind of pulls it back, and it's like it returns to who it finds worthy. And she's just like, the fuck? I've been using that the whole fucking time. For years! This is bullshit.
We're listening to the sword. She's got to contend with that. And I appreciate that Yuzuki gets the bulk of the lion's share of the episode to like give her a little bit of extra depth and a little bit to see, just to see her fight in the long term as well. If we had other two lads like go stuck off together. But meanwhile, Jin, he's like following the trail, or he's got this got this picture of his granddad chained up somewhere. He's going to follow that leads and just rescue his granddad. He gets to the abandoned warehouse at the edge of town. He's scoping it out. And like, this has got to be the room. His granddad's right in here. Oh no, his arm has been chopped off. I got to get you out of here. But it's like, oh no, his neck is twisting around 180 degrees to mock me. His granddad doesn't normally do that. This might be a setup.
He promptly explodes, and then there's like a cool guy who's just like, yeah, I totally gotcha. And then he has the fight from the second Matrix movie with all the Agent Smiths.
I'm fine with that. I think that's
don't mind them taking off in it, because it was just like they're doing their own thing with it. It's fine.
But
they also did like the wave of men, which I do find really funny as well whenever they do that.
Yeah. Didn't do any pinball sound effects, though. missing that.
Matt, I've not watched The Matrix for so long, I just went straight to Madrox the Multiple Man. We all see the guy, while he's beating him up with his clones, explains the history of Jin's granddad to him about how he was the strongest of the Southern Army's Taekwondo experts, and he was the only survivor fighting the North Korea's Taekwondo experts.
I feel really bad for that's the one I was taught when I was a kid, honestly. I didn't know, man.
And also, apparently, he's beaten every member of the Six, which comes into play at the end of the episode when they're watching Jin and they all start rubbing the wounds they got from his grandfather.
Yeah. Like the acupuncture dude says, I guess he's missing that arm after all.
Yeah.
Getting that phantom pain in it.
There's some. What else is there? While he's down there, he discovers the bodies of the team that his teammates are fighting. Also, your other fella goes looking for him and ends up running into Busty Bruce Lee.
With the duck face.
Well, he initially meets the guy who I assume she kicked the shit out of in the toilet.
I guess 38-year-old carpenter trying to get
38-year-old high school diploma seeker man, who is just like, yeah, he's been beaten up in the bathroom, and she is like coming onto the guy while also trying to murder him. That kind of person, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, ooh, we like you. I have to fight you. And by fight you, I mean fuck you, and then fight you afterwards.
Or one or both, yeah.
Yeah. Jake Gall comes in there. It's like, oh, you done in the bathroom or what? Come on, get out of here. It's like, oh, he's here. It's like, Han gets the sensation. If he wanted to, if I took one step forward, he could have killed me right in the spot. This guy is not to be messed around with. Again, so she just walks in and says, like, oh, this dude. Right, he's just an asshole. Don't mind him.
Yeah. I get the feeling with Jegal is that he's nothing to do with Nux. He's just an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a separate villain.
Mostly it's about Mira. She's gets knocked back. You can't hold up this guy with all the sword moves. She can't even do the bare hand techniques. It's not working. Then she has this moment of reflection as she's laying down on the canvas or falling into the water in her own mind, and she's a version of herself, but it's talking with a different voice. And it says, you want to be strong, you want to be fucking good, you want to be able to succeed your style, got to find the answer within yourself, man. I can help you out with that. And she manifests or invokes the spirit of a legendary Chinese warrior, Lu Bu.
Yeah, I think the only thing that changes is she gets those... they're pheasant feathers, aren't they?
Yeah, the head, the large, elaborate headpiece, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, it's just her with the sword, but I mean, like, that's all you need, really.
You know she's good with that.
Yeah. There's a particular line that Lu Bu gives her that what she's expected to do with the power he's lending her, which I think is to become the strongest there is. Like the particular wording, I believe, is a thing which will be borne out throughout the series. In this destiny that Lu Bu has given her, which is basically to be a modern day Lu Bu by the sounds of things.
Lock everybody up. Yeah. I command it.
And indeed she does. I like the fact that she just summons her sword straight back to her off the guy. Now she's the one who's worthy.
It's a lot like Thor, it's like getting the hammer back after he's, you know, he has this crisis of confidence and he has to overcome it, and then oh, he's back, baby.
I was really worried they were gonna have your man defeat the clone user guy, and then the clones would just disappear, and since they're not here, they win automatically. But I was glad they gave her the win.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what these guys, whether they're anything to do with his power or somebody else has got the... I don't know how these powers hop around, because clearly these guys...
have the powers, because your man's the Kraken, because he's a swimmer. Yeah.
It seems overly complicated, because as we know, it's very easy to game this and put a ringer in there. If you have this fella who's 38, he's just going to like night school. Like, here is like our latest contestant here. His name is Kenshiro Kasumi. He's like trying to get a weekend class finished and doing home economics.
Also, here's a professional wrestler from America doing trying to get into the Seoul team. That seems... Hang on.
He was a kangaroo that boxes in his spare time. Oh, it's doing a woodworking class.
If only. That would be more my sort of series. Then we get Jin's fight, and it's shorter, but also it cleverly shows you the fight he had to get here, which is essentially just use the same moves in both. And I was like, that's a really clever way.
That's a clone of your man. He can absolutely beat this guy because he's already literally beaten him 5 minutes ago. Yeah.
I do like the stereo split screen that's waiting on the dude.
It's very well done. And I know the bulk of the fighting was obviously her fight, so you don't want to take up too much of it. And it's like, well, we know he can beat this guy, so let's just watch it in stereo. Yes. Hooray!
And the fact that he's beaten him with moves he's invented, that's the thing which frightens the six. He's like, oh dear, the tiger has raised another tiger.
He keeps coming up with original moves. One is a cool original move. One is that original move twice.
Yes.
It's stuff he's learned from his opponent, though, because it's a variation on like
on your man's
fight with Han.
And even though he's not summoning things, it visually appears to be summoning things. It just has flashy.
Yeah.
Dragon type lights. It's. I mean, I'm currently, because I've played so much Yakuza, I'm seeing everything through a lens of Yakuza.
But
the fact that everything has the same names as the thing he does is adds to it.
Dragon really quick was cool. It's what's that animator who was putting that in? It was like, no, the dragon is made out of fire or water or smoke.
In a bunch of things.
It was Canada.
That's the guy. That's the dude.
And then people do it still as tribute to him.
Right.
And because, of course, it's just really cool.
Yes.
This was one of the better episodes, I felt. Partly because there's been
loads of... The two different parts worked pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, and there was less info dump, and we weren't cutting across quite so many different people's storylines.
Just to kind of show the guys, like, stroking the big X scar on his head. Yes. It's like, oh, that's where all of these motherfuckers got their injuries and scars and lost arms and shit. It was like, it implied story rather than just going like, and the grandfather defeated each of them individually and gave them a horrible wound.
Yes.
It's like, we've
learned that earlier, and now when we see their reaction to the grandson, it's like, okay, that all adds up nicely, and it's a nice little visual thing, a little bit of visual storytelling of both their attitude to the grandfather and now their attitude to the grandson as well. It's like they're realizing that, oh, he's coming into the power. Will he be the key?
It's in this moment like this where he realizes that what you got is a very straightforward story. I think you should give your eyes some credit and be able to pick up on these things. I think over explaining it is where you're falling down.
That's going to kill it. Yeah.
Everyone's played Street Fighter before. They kind of have the gist of what's going on here, so they'll probably be able to parse it themselves.
But he was
seen a martial arts film.
You want to know about his cool mythos he's made up?
I don't give a shit. I scream about the emotion of two people like punching their feelings into each other. That's when you're like really up there. It's because it's simple doesn't mean it's bad or it's fucking not worthy of anything. It can be simple but relatable and resonant to a wider audience.
Yeah, so a few of the episodes have been the games master reading his detailed lore at you. And now you've actually getting back to playing the game again yourself. but
the stuff you read on the loading screen of an RPG.
So we're in like the mid-60s, I think, in terms of chapters. And we're on episode 9. So what's that? That's 4 more episodes? So maybe it might only be the end of the Nationals they get to, I wonder.
I feel like up against Park Ilio. Il Pio, even, next episode. So it'll be like two very earnest dudes who just want to fight and just be successors and progenitors of their own styles against each other. So they're both really nice lads, but only one can win. I think that, I hope, will also be like a stronger matchup like I had with Jin versus Han earlier on.
Yeah, the next arc is a short one, though, so I wonder if they'll squeeze that in, and that would be the end of volume. The next arc is called God's Arrival Arc. So I assume they figure out what the key is by the end of this national
arc.
Yeah.
They gotta go to the next stage, and it's like interdimensional.
Volume 3's first arc is called the Sage Realm Arc. Then the next arc is called the Second Great War Arc.
For fuck's sake, is this going straight to Dragon Ball Super levels of bombastic?
All right, I mean, yeah, as long as it doesn't info dump so much, I'm fine with it fucking just flying through that shit and getting to the big stuff.
Yeah.
Friends, I wouldn't mind seeing Universe 7, Jin, Mori, and all those other dudes.
Then we've got... roll my eyes down to the appropriate place. Oh, it's Fruits Basket, episode 22. This isn't what I want. Tell me what it is that they don't want and who doesn't want it.
Yuki thought that he didn't want Toru to... He didn't think that he wanted to be basically his mammy. But the signs are all there, man. He's just from his upbringing. He's never really known the warmth of a parent's love. And then when she comes along and she's so kind and she's willing to listen to him and always there to say the right thing, thinking, oh my God, I love her. But he wasn't sure he loved her in what way. So
he was basically trying to play up the whole, it's like anytime it was like they had a moment together, he was like, hey baby, I'm this handsome prince. And it was kind of like he was playing into that stereotype in order to try and push it towards a romantic love. But then he was like, that feels weird. And that's not what he wanted. He wanted this person who cared for him in a more motherly way, in a more familial way, that isn't a romantic way.
I will give Kakeru some credit. It's like, because he's laying all this out for him. So it's like, that's really weird, man. Like, I guess sometimes people, they go up with somebody who resembles, like, their mother or their father or some shit like that, and they can make it work.
Yeah,
but, you know, just so you know, this sounds kind of weird. But I'm not going to judge it, you know, if you want to make it work, go for it.
But yeah, he doesn't take the piss out of him so much because it's not like an Oedipal kind of love. It's more so, it's not that he wants to get with someone who romantically is also like his mother. It's more so, I love this person as like a parental type figure, even though they're the same age as me, which is weird, but not in a romantic way. And he actually kind of wants to support her in that regard if he can.
Yeah, and he's actually talking with somebody else who has got the same frame reference for as he does, and hearing what they have to say about it. It's like, oh yeah, I didn't think of it that way, or oh, it's kind of nice to just let this out, and it's like, you know, think because they're, you know, student council idiots just going like, hey, don't worry about it, I'm going to kick a ball into your face.
Yeah, when it kind of get that tender moments and this deep unfurling of feelings, and also it's like, I'm going to fuck around with a football for a bit. It felt like mates as well. It's interesting how quickly and naturally they've developed that relationship between those two guys. Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to sort of figure out what to do with the school play, because Toru is trying to learn her lines for that as the evil stepsister, and she can't hack it.
It's basically asking her to be the asshole. She's not good at it. And then obviously you have Cinderella going, like, oh, Toru, you're so beautiful. A precious flower you are. They're like, okay, the director's like, this isn't going to fucking work. I'm going to rewrite the whole fucking thing. And Toru's like, hey, can you rewrite Kyo's parts as well? So he might actually come to practice. That would be nice.
Yeah.
So I assume we're going to get some sort of badass Prince Charming and that kind of shit, and have like a really nice stepsister.
Yeah. Uotani is there as well, like, oh, like, I heard the other class is doing, like, this other thing. It's like, you know, Mito Komon, and they're going, like, differently to the story. It's going to be, like, you know, three female main characters. It's going to be, like, Samurai Charlie's Angel shit going on. Oh, I saw it when you class, which we were doing that play, damn it!
And everyone else is like, hey, but what about, like, the bath scene? It's like, yeah, the teacher isn't going to let him do a bath scene with three lady fucking leads. Come on, think about it. But yeah, that kind of makes him realize we can just rewrite Cinderella and work it for the people playing the role.
In the meanwhile, there's this like a tension has risen up to the surface again between Kyo and Yuki. Like Kyo seems to be like, no, like doing this, you know, getting out of his mind. He's actually having the cute little things where like he's like playing keep away with Toru. He's like, oh, if you think you can play the bully in the school play, well, you're even being bullied here now. Ooh, you give me that sip. Yuki comes in and he's kind of like trying to give like the stern this stern approach to him saying, oh, like, he's trying to come at Yuki. He's like, you know, you gotta get your shit together, man, because that's my mother you're talking to. That's my mother you're going out with. I can't, like, which means one day you could be kind of like my dad. I don't want that, and I want you to treat her right.
And in his like flashback talking to his friend, like he has said that Kyo is someone that Yuki respects Kyo, but he wants to be like, he wants to kind of be like him, but he also wants Yuki to live up to what he thinks Yuki should, or he wants Kyo to live up to what he thinks he should be. Which is like, it's a weird situation. Yeah, it's kind of like, you're not good enough for my mom. You need to be good enough for her. It's like, dude, you're all the same fucking age. What the hell?
So how about you stop fun sulking here in the staircase and just go and do rehearsals in the play? Of course, no, you're fun leaving her waiting there as well, man. And he's like, fuck you, you're always fucking on my ass about this shit. You don't fucking know how to think you're so fucking better than me. Fuck you. Just puts his fucking fist through the window.
Yeah,
got his hand up.
You can see it from like Kyo's point of view, this guy's like condescending to him. It's like, no, he expects better from you. He like holds you on a pedestal. It's you need to like live up to it from his point of view, but you just seen it as like, this guy's always talking down to me like a son of a bitch.
Do you get the first inkling here, maybe? Maybe the first, but maybe it's like getting through to him. It's just like, ah, oh, well, maybe I'm just fucking coming back at him like that because he's hitting some home truths there with me. Because yeah. Kyo comes by later and says, like, Toru's been, like, reading her script and going over her lines. No, nope. And waiting for him to turn up as well. And she was kind of got thinking, oh, it's cool of her to wait for me and that, but I also did leave her waiting there. And she could have been thinking any number of things there about, well, where is he? Is he all right? Is he fine?
Was she worried about me? Was she angry at me? Was she disappointed? It's like he's trying to put himself into her head. It's like, what was she thinking while she sat there for hours waiting for me to get my shit together?
Maybe like what a real like if I'm a real man, I should just like, you know, not put my fist through windows and not even like cut my hand up without even like blinking. I should be more trying to just put up with things. And get on with things, even if it's uncomfortable for me, but if it's for someone else's benefit, to just, you know, suck it up, man, just get on with it.
I did like that she tries to react to his, like, you know, cut hand as like, oh, shit, your hand's cut. I better get the first aid kit. And he just sort of, like, leans his head in her, and it's kind of like a thing of not admitting defeat or something, but kind of, like, leaving himself emotionally vulnerably open.
Yes.
And he's just like, yeah, okay, I'll read the script. Thanks, and come on, let's go home, kind of thing. You know, he's just like, and she didn't ask him about the hand because it's like, whoa, he was really close to me, and that's a weird emotionally vulnerable position he put himself in. So she doesn't question it more. It was a nice moment.
It's just like, I really want to kiss you right now. And this is the closest thing I can do because of the stupid curse.
Yeah, yeah. He can't, like, give himself that kind of happiness. He's still caught in that regard of denying himself happiness, basically.
Yeah. What has happened there as well? Also, Ayame is hanging around because they need someone to get the costumes for the school play. So he's coming down, swanning in. He's obviously, Ayame, he's Yuki's other brother. He's so cool. And also his lovely assistant, Mina, she's class as well. And like, Mina's going around. Ooh, what are your measurements? I get a close look at this.
Like, it's kind of a creepy thing to ask a high schooler, but she is literally there to measure them for costumes. So everybody's happy, except for Yuki, who's initially like, you don't have permission to be here. And she's like, we got permission from the principal. It's like, grrr.
There to be embarrassing.
Yeah. You get some of those moments where they're having the fun interactions with the family. Yeah, good progression, good... kind of changing and stating of people kind of trying to get together with their feelings and trying to figure them out.
I'm just happy that they have gotten through that whole Yuki hump, because we get it. He thinks Toru's mammy. We get this. You can lay off it out. No, we need another half an episode to get this cleared. I'm just super sure that you know what's going on with him. I kind of gathered that before this whole thing even began, but all right. You go off, I suppose.
Yeah, I thought they handled that pretty well. It wasn't as clunky as it could have been. Yeah.
It just felt very long, and there's not much time left in this, I don't think, so I might want to
get it. No. It feels like the end of it might be a little rushed. Hmm.
Yeah. Again, just like, it's probably just like stacking up differently from how I remember reading the comic of it.
Sure.
If I can know what the hope they can just like rush through this. But they know how much comic they need to adapt, and they don't know what ending they need to arrive on. Just that final bit of it, when we do get our denouement, I can just remember being this like very dramatic, very affecting surge of emotion. I want to make sure there's adequate time for everybody to get their epilogue, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah.
They may make you buy the epilogue as an AOVA.
That's how they get you. Yeah.
Okay, then we've got Wacky TV Na Na Na, Season 3, Episode 21, Sacrifice, the Siren that Tempts the Monster. In which Nanaoka remembers the wise words of their late advisor, Takohashi, that apparently the Kraken is a horn dog, and so therefore the best way to attract it is to sacrifice a beautiful maiden. And in order to sacrifice a beautiful maiden, that straw has been drawn by Nanayama.
He's got the nicest hair.
I think of the three of them, he's the one who's probably the closest to a beautiful maiden. Sorry, Nanamori and Nanaoka. You're a little bit further away. And so in order to attract the Kraken, apparently you should sing. And then once you've attracted it with singing, do some impressions.
So this is like, it's already like partially ad-lib to begin with, but this is just, okay, we're going to just park you in front of the microphone and you got to like try and...
you're going
to
go off script, sing a song. Serenade
this monster. You just go off, dude, but then do whatever you want. Probably some loose notes here, but like just give us what you got.
Octopus, octopus, squid, are you a squid? Da-na-na-na. And it's just kind of like, okay, now do an impression. You know, they're just fucking, with each other in the booth. It's really funny.
Check it out, Shinichi Mori. Oh, I'm Shinichi Mori. And Mori's a word for forest, so I'm Shinichi of the forest. I'm a kind of smoldering anchor singer. You know, they all seem like recent references to probably be contemporaneous with some of the what's brought before, like that late night TV thing, kind of like 70s, 80s things.
Yeah, 80s, 90s, I think, because the late night TV thing was definitely the 90s. And
somebody's had their heyday or their big debut anyway, like back in the 70s. So
yeah, I think a lot of them were people who were on TV a lot in the 80s. I think it's people they grew up with. It's a lot of it.
It's weird. Like, it shouldn't be fun of them referencing a thing that we would have no fucking clue about the specific, well, for most of the part, of the specific impressions and bad impressions that they're doing. But it's just the fact that they're having so much fun doing it.
Yes, that works past the other thing. Whereas some of the other things they've done in the past, it helps to look it up and then you get the extra reference. Particularly because if they get a guest voice like Takahashi this season, obviously Fujinami the previous two seasons, but also... the woman playing the mole ninja in season two.
Yeah.
A lot of her bits were references to what she initially was famous for doing, which is why she was dressed in, like, aerobics gear. whereas, with this one, it was like, I'm not going to research every single impression they're doing. Because you can get the jokes, you can get the humour of it is that in the fun they're saying, but also there's things you get anyway, because they're referring to Shinichi Mori as by his wife's name, basically saying, oh, it's Masako Shinichi, or whatever it is. It's
like, you get it on Monday.
Yes, why don't you just say Shinichi Mori in the first place? We know who he was, rather than actually miss the family name off entirely. But again, it's just because they're ad-libbing and trying to crack each other up, which is great.
They do, like, you know, like, he's doing the difference, he's breaking down. He's like, oh, it worked though. The Kraken is taking
the Kraken is very slowly moving around in the background.
It worked. He's been dragged off into the depths.
And in the animation, every time he does like a male impression, the Kraken backs off. Every time he does a female impression, it gets closer.
No, go back to Mrs. Masako Mori. A sensei.
Good stuff.
And then he runs off. The Kraken runs off with him, and his last words. What was his last words?
I love crab.
Oh, I love crab.
I love crab.
That's the thing that really cracking up at the end.
It's just that Mori Dame as an aside in the recording to his call. I can't believe it's like his last words. I love crab. I love fucking mad. Why are you saying? Who says that?
And also, the episode just ends halfway through that line.
Yeah.
Of them discussing it. It's like, we've got a set amount of time. We're just going to stop the episode right here.
That happens sometimes with Crunchyroll things you're watching. It does seem to cut off. Sometimes
it's sometimes funnier in this case because it makes it feel all the more like raw in terms of the recording. I guess.
I was accepting it as a thing which was happening because I've been watching a lot of Simon and Simon as it slowly gets worse as I watch through it. But one thing I like about Simon and Simon, I will say, is unlike a lot of other detective shows, they'll catch the guy and then they'd be like, "Hey, there'll be an ending."
Denouement.
There you go. I needed someone else to say it before I could remember how to pronounce it. It's been a long day. whereas, quite like Simon Simon, it'll be like, okay, we caught the guy, run credits. That's it. You don't need to see what happens to the guy. We don't need us all sitting around laughing about how we solve this crime. Or some sort of punchline. The punchline is just like, bang, we've caught the guy. End of episode.
Big giveaway, toys.
Yeah, well, not quite often there's not even, because they're private detectives, there's not even cops to arrest people. They might just catch the guy. We've no idea what they do with the guy after they've caught him, but they've caught him. So the episode's ended. So yeah, this was why I was like, oh yeah, I just end the episode right now. That's fine, even if they hadn't finished that line. But you're right, it could just be Crunchyroll, because I can't even log on to Crunchyroll on my PS4 at the moment. It's gone a bit.
Oh shit.
I may have to clear the cache on that as well. Make a change from clearing the cache on Red Dead Online. YouTube was doing it as well, but YouTube was a known PS4 bug, so maybe there's a known PS4 bug with Crunchyroll as well. I shall have to look into it. Then we shall move on to longer animation, such as Decadence, Episode 9, Turbocharger. For me, the best thing of the week.
It's a tough week. There's a bunch of good things, but yeah, fair enough. I think you must love it, the fact that this show has more weird-looking robots than it does humans.
It does.
Like, even this episode, which was like supposed to be presumably half and half, it's like, nope, there's way more weird-looking robots on the screen.
It is.
Also, they're rising up in the socialist revolution. They're going to tear this system down. We're going to set the shit on fire and make it smell so bad no one wants to come near it.
Yeah.
But also, we'll arrange the shots of this revolution really well and sinister and have recurring motifs like circles throughout the episode. So, yes, the plan is we'll set fire to all the shit. The smell of the shit will rise and it will escape into the water.
It'll make all the minders like really sick, literally. Yes.
And the Galdols will be agitated by the toxicity of the smoke. Mm. And then they'll activate their floating things. I forget what it's called.
The zone.
Yeah. And this will allow us to break in using our backpacks, and we can float around and destroy the various things we need to destroy. Because
everyone in the facility will be floating freeform, whereas you will be able to move within the 3D space. Yeah.
Yes, but Turkey the bastard, he hadn't betrayed. He'd got Sark to betray them. That was his get out.
Mm. My fault. You did this.
Yes.
You called him in, pal.
So the episode's more about Sark than it is about anybody else, really, and his having to deal with his betrayal and the betrayal not going the way that Turkey had promised him. I do like, my favourite gag is the guard robots changing their noses halfway through the episode.
Like a cover over their nose, yeah.
So they can...
Because they're coming in earlier on, they're just like, oh, it smells so bad in here. More robot vomit.
There's so much vomit in this episode.
Oh, it's not going to be for everyone from that, but yeah, at least they do the buoy and they appear to be, you know, puking oil, basically.
Yeah. Donatello goes off in his avatar while this is going on.
I was like, well, if we're shutting it down, I might as well have one last hurrah.
one last go on the game.
One last raid. Yeah. I liked
it. Out Rocket Punch. I didn't know he had that. Well, I kind of had it because I see it in the opening credits, but I was going to see it for real.
Hmm.
We'll get his even better rocket punch later on when he starts firing the heads of the guards at people.
Oh, that was fucking excellent. And they're breaking into the facility, but you see the scene beforehand where he says to... What's her name? The head of the tanker?
Oh, I can't remember her name.
Kurenai.
She's, you know, she's trying to like glomp onto him, but he's kind of like, yeah, I can't tell you what the secret mission is. Just know it'll fucking save the world. It'll stop the Gadol. And she just trusts him on his world. And also he's just saying, it's like, you're the best woman I've ever seen. Kind of thing.
I've never met a stronger, finer woman.
And she's like, I'll get stronger when you get back.
That's an O. That's fine with an O in there, by the way. It's like, ooh. Well, this is the way she's going to read it anyway.
Yeah, for sure. But she seems satisfied with that, and just she trusts him. And he was talking to what's the girl robot who like the hacker
Jill.
I was going to say the actor again, but she's like, hey, when you bring the human there, it might blow their fucking mind. So do watch out for that, because it's going to reveal the nature of the world to them, and that's a bit existential to pull off a heist. I'm just saying. Keep an eye out.
And that's how he just walks through the force field before he can warn her about the force field.
Hey, so you might die or... never mind, you're already... Okay.
In serious work, boys, no, I should go to first just to make certain.
Yeah, because he wouldn't die if
before he'd even say all that, he says, like, well, like, walking through, just hops out of the Jeep and is walking along. He's like, hey, you coming?
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of what is... endearing to him about her is that she is just must get in and get her hands dirty and just get on with it. That's what is needed when we bring the system down. People are able to just fucking get things done. Just
get in there and start walking.
Busting the place on anti-gravity. We're getting down it around pretty easily because everyone's like panicking because they don't want
panicking
going
and
on.
Floating.
Hugin is here though in his avatar. What the hell? And how is he standing around just like normally in this anti-gravity environment? It's a long story about that. Not to maybe watch out. He's got to fuck us up. I'm going to fight him. That's when Jill needs to hop in and say, well, they're fucking clearly in trouble with this now. So I need to just hack into the game, throwing some aimbots, throwing some decoys, you know, complete hacks.
It's not even hacking into the game. It's hacking into Hugrin's eyes. What he's doing.
You know how hard it is to hack into the administrator's fucking shit? So he sees multiples of them. And initially it looks like he stabs it through. And I was like, no, they didn't. And I was like, oh, they didn't. Okay, phew.
Yeah, it did look very like... it took a while for that the initial illusion to disappear. But yeah, they held on it long enough to make you go... But no, that was a different show did that to us this week.
He can't trust his vision, even though he's really OP in his avatar. But that'll give him enough time to distract him and maybe get a hit off on him while she runs interference.
And then meanwhile, the fight's going on downstairs. Jill pulls Donatello back in.
He's really disappointed. I liked everyone in the game was like, what the fuck is wrong with that guy? He just fell over.
I like his response is, what are you doing, you stupid brainy woman?
Donatello gets some great bits in this, yeah, for sure. Great lines and great action, yeah.
Yeah, well,
he's like, well, everyone else is getting fucked up by those dudes, so we need a big bruiser guy to actually be here and help us in this plan rather than dick about in the game one last hurrah.
I think mainly for her, though, it's basically don't let anybody get into the hacking room.
Yeah, she's trying to keep the fart out as well. She's just, like, packing in the stuff. It's just like, it stinks out there.
She threatens to like rewrite his brain if he doesn't go and deal with this situation. And once he sees the situation, he does deal with it, as I say, by ripping people's heads off, shoving them in his arm, and firing them at more people.
And just picking up people and hitting them with other people. All great stuff. Yeah.
Great. Also, because he runs into Sark, who's trying to lead, who's reluctantly now leading the guys to the hacking room, and that's when he runs into Donatello. And he takes a stray shot, and then later informs Turkey this has happened, and Turkey's like, no, it was never about you, it was never about this, it was all about me getting a pardon.
I was just using you, Cypher. And Sark's like basically bleeding out, and you see like his thing is like, hey, top up on Oxone, and it's like, it's leaking out of me right now. Shutdown imminent.
Doing operational limit. Cabaragas saying is, I gotta fucking push myself past my limits if I'm gonna get this done. It's just like, you're right.
And it's him realizing what he needs, like over what Turkey was telling him, if you do this, you'd be a hero. And he's like, wow, I could be a hero. And it's this situation where he's kind of figuring out what he really needs to do to be the hero of the situation, which he'll probably get no fucking credit for.
Which has become a suicide bomber.
Yeah.
These guys kept pointing to one side, Sarkozy's special brew.
100% pure. Let me just insert it in my ass heroically. It's just like, why is that the fucking thing?
Long live the glorious revolution as she dives into the pit of shit, which also Turkey has been chucked into when Donatello bowed him in there.
I did like how Turkey just could not put up a decent fight at all. He just tries.
He's like, I got my cool tail. And Donatello's like, the fuck, dude, I'm huge. It's not going to make a difference.
Oh, right now I've got a thing I could throw you in the hole with.
Yeah, pretty much.
He dies like up to his neck in shit, and then he explodes in like a pillar of fire, but also shit.
And that thing carries all the way up into the not the vent, but the pipe where the shit comes down
and hits the reactor of the factory, so everything's royally fucked.
They're initially like, the reactor's been shut down. No way, the reactor's been destroyed. And they're like, yeah. They've turned off the zone, but they're like, that's very bad, though.
Yeah, and then they get away from Hugrin because Cabaragi uses the fire without a harpoon in it just to blast a hole in the wall.
Yeah, because she comes back to say, it's like, hey, Cabaragi, the water's like busting in because the whole place is blowing up, and Cabaragi just uses an empty fucking pellet gun to... distract him long enough to make him back into an exploding part of the base, basically.
Yeah. And then there's one last thing they need to do, which is...
Which was the simple part of the thing. This button and it kills all the Gadol. And I did like that shot earlier when he's kind of like, hey, see your pipe, kind of closing the door. And it looked like really menacing, but you can tell it's just like, yeah, he knows he's about to kill all Gadol.
Well, yes, the question is based on the preview.
Is Pipe a bug?
I think Pipe is a bug, and the other little one is as well.
Or a little thing, yeah. there's a certain point in this area because, oh my god, even when they get a player of extra help enough food because we're not sure if we're going to make it back from this one. So we've got to give him the best chance we can, but then it's just thinking in the back of his mind, oh, if we do this, it means a little pipe. Is one life weighed against all these others? Is it worth it?
Yes. In this case. That's the decision Cameron comes to, for sure.
Yeah.
But yes, I think because in the preview, you see the other little pet Gadol still alive. So I assume Pipe will have survived as
well.
Because
when they're hitting the Gadol suicide thing, suicide button, there is like a thing that goes, like a mechanical device that goes off in them. So maybe the bugs don't have that built in or something.
They just disintegrate, don't they, when they... or dissolve
they
in the water.
They sort of like
possibly.
Go black and stop moving and then disintegrate into pieces,
Reminded me of that video of the raccoon trying to clean spun sugar that I saw earlier in the week.
Adorable.
It's got a big, big old block of spun sugar and takes it to the water, puts it in, and then he's like looking for it. Like, where's it going?
Yeah. I've seen that one before. I know. No, there was time now.
Dear. Yeah, no, really fucking good episode.
It is, and then Kaburagi proceeds to break Natsumi's brain by explaining
what
that
if I told you?
Everything Jim, about your life is manufactured.
Yeah, the world, the Gadol, and this body of mine, all fake, all made for a specific purpose. And because she's freaking out, it's like, wait, so we just push this button and all Gadol die? Because initially she's like, hey, we appear to be going into the Gadol nest. And he's like, yep. We're going in an elevator. Yeah, that's right. Don't question it. Just go with it. Just go with it. But this is the point where it's like, we push the button. We've killed all Gadol. It's like, hang on a second. I feel like I need to ask something here. And that's where we leave them in front of what seems to be a giant brain, which I'm assuming is like the brain that's running the facility, like the little robot dudes kind of thing.
Yeah. And yeah, the preview, which you have to go on YouTube because it's not part of the episode, seems to have Cabaret you back in his little Haybot body next week, driving a minecart of some kind.
Adventures, yay!
Yes. And it doesn't look like anything's happier next episode after they've destroyed the system.
Well, there's always a what next.
What am I going to do with the fallout?
Yeah. I mean, next week's episode's called Break System. I was like...
the brakes on this.
Yes. Well, also, it's to break the system. I was like, well done. I'm sure I think maybe you had that idea in the episode title you wanted to use at some point and then worked your way backwards from that.
Well, I mean, like, you could say turbocharger shit is fucking going off in this one, so.
Oh yeah, I mean, I liked how a lot of other series this would have been like the last episode and everyone would be happy at the end, whereas this is the ninth episode and everyone's like, well, that's that thing done. Where does
ninth
that leave
episode
us?
Break the world now. What next?
Yeah, that's great. Again, we're coming back to Bruce with mentioned this, but Gurunaga last week, how that was like, you know, after the great victory, what happens next and losses
exactly,
and that, they don't kind of ponder. Yeah, if you think about it, this film actually ends kind of poorly, you know, because there's still like this other bit, you know, the blue up the Death Star, but the Empire is still there. So why is this big thing? And just kept interrogating like the continue the what follows on from that, you know, and how this system, it doesn't just end with one grand gesture. It needs to be a continuous change over time. It's hard work and it seems like it's endless, but like it just takes a while to things to actually improve.
Then let's go to a place where things are definitely not improving. It's Apare Radman episode 10, The Bridge to Hell.
Yeah, Niall, when I hadn't watched this and you were saying to me, it's just like, it's shit's going down. And I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And
it's called A Bridge to Hell.
Fucking wrong.
Which, you know,
appropriate.
It's going to go wrong. We know that Richard Reisman, he's so nice, he's actually guilty cigar and he's pulling off his stunt here now. He's pulling off his grand plan.
And we're getting a train robbery in a cowboy show. Fucking A.
Yes.
When your man just like, I hired you, the world's most dangerous criminal to do this one specific job. Why aren't you doing the job? And the way he gets fucked up is so over the top. I was just like, Jesus, fuck.
Okay. He has quick cuts to the exterior of the train. He's fucked that guy out the window and took some of like the paint of it and put it like the wall on the paint of it as well.
I think he picked him up by the chair and hurled him out. Looks like the chair. He's still sitting in the chair as he goes outside.
Yeah, yeah. He picked up a considerable amount of fucking train and threw it through the train, out of the train. It was very like, it's like, oh, we're in fucking a different show now. It's a really good turning point in the episode for the show.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, that confirmed my idea that Guilty Cigar had his own plan. And his plan turns out to be, I'm going to steal all the money.
If I don't care about trains, I don't care about cars, I don't care about the supremacy of the West, unless it's me, because the only thing that matters in this world is power and public money. Do you get having power?
I don't care if the future's coming. As long as I'm around, I'll just be the one on top and I'll do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, he's so assured. I mean, he's so casually. He's putting on the coat and the scarf. He's whistling a merry tune to himself as he signals his posse to come on to like start robbing the train and we'll take it over, essentially. Felt very Colt Express to me, with all the guys ducking around, dodging shotguns and pistols.
Yeah, sure.
But he's got him grand. He's got him like all sewn up.
And like the initial premise of it, just like, okay, we're going to race the train to the next fucking thing. And now here's where the real race takes place. So we got to get to the bridge before the train. And it's like, but then all this shit's happening on the train. It's like, oh, this is very bad.
Like, it's this very symbolic thing. But also it's like, the train has stopped right there. It means the cars can get past.
Yes. And then Richard Reisman runs towards the drivers to warn them. And then he gets shot. But Nathan is having none of it. Or Dylan, is it? Dylan is. I can't remember his name. Is Nathan or Dylan? It's Dylan.
It's Dylan.
Which one?
The dandy, I think he's called.
Yes, that's him. Yeah.
Which character? Seth's which character, isn't it?
Seth Carter. No, I'm talking about the driver.
Oh, the racer.
Yeah,
oh, Dylan. Yes. Dylan the Hero.
I don't know why I keep wanting to call him Nathan. Who am I thinking
of? Wait, is his name The Hero?
That's his like nickname. Yeah, his name is.
Oh,
his name is
sorry.
Gordon.
I thought you meant his last name was Dahiro, and I was just like, that seems a bit on the nose. It's Dylan the Hero. Okay, that's fine. Okay,
That's the way they say.
Yes, we learned his job bastard.
It's not way worse than Guilty Cigar as a name. I mean, like, it's a great name. I'm not gonna knock that name.
The name is Smoke Cigars. He's got his own rollies.
He's just that dirty.
yes, and then he uses his Guilty Cigar voice and. Reveals that he is, in fact, the bad guy. And then just basically is mean to all our heroes, except for the bad brothers who presumably got hit
by a part of exploding train. I'm going to guess that next week theirs is the only car intact enough after hitting a fucking train to...
Well, yes, because we see them drive through a building earlier.
Yeah. But them freaking out is like, oh shit, like a piece of train just comes flying at them. Good stuff. But he just takes apart fucking everyone. And sometimes like not even in a personal way, like to your one, he's kind of like, it's gonna shame this car is wasting out a woman. You know, he's just been a real bastard, basically.
Yeah, he's also just demanding fun. I didn't. You're still pining with grief over your deceased wife, Claudia, and you had to talk to your ghost race, and you could rebuild the orphanage that she grew up in,
yes.
But you had to go off and fight your battles, and you weren't there to protect her.
Yeah, it's very John Marston from the end of the first Red Dead Redemption.
It's got some definite cowboy things there. He says TJ is just crazy and all talk, and DJ's like, I might be crazy, but I got the moves.
No, you don't, because you've got fun how many pistols like strapped around your waist there, and I've just got the one, and I can overpower you easily. Yes.
Also,
with your own fucking guns,
take your guns out because you're basically carrying more guns for me. Is basically how it ends up being.
There's a lot of like gun kata kind of fucking shit, but it's all very, very fucking cool.
I'm expecting Sophia to be tied to railway tracks next episode.
Oh, absolutely. Like the whole thing of it was like he threatens him, going like, "Oh, Sophia," he pulls out the hat that has blood, and then it's like, and later on he's like, and he hears her scream. He's like, "I didn't say she was dead. I was just fucking with you." But yeah, I mean, like, he's absolutely cowboy villain, so she's got to be tied to some railway tracks. I think maybe tied to railway tracks on the bridge, maybe some dynamite. We'll see. We'll probably get a few other fucking things in there as well.
What's he fun? Ah, what was that? Hototo, the little kid here. Oh, yeah. Killed your father. Trying to come
that was really smart how you got everyone else to do your revenge to get your father back. Maybe next time I'll get your mother killed as well, huh?
Yeah, that was fucking vicious. Oh,
fucking cold. Yeah.
Hototo throws a hatchet, you motherfucker. And then he catches it and flings it. Gets it in midair and lobs it back between his feet. Like, he's just fucking. He's more than just like a good gunman. He's just like, seems to be.
Just like a badass.
Superlative ability in a lot of areas. Most of all, being a absolute bastard.
Yes, he's the king of that.
It's arguable that maybe they wouldn't be in this problem if Dylan and TJ had been willing to work together and fight him.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, he takes every person down individually, but I'm thinking the thing it'll be like as a group they'll actually be able to fight him. Because on each of their own, he can't beat Hotoko like throwing hatchets. He can beat Dylan and TJ at the fighting with guns. But it's like, can you beat both of them though? That's the other fucking thing. That's the thing I'm thinking anyway. I know it's a very simple solution. Let's everyone gang up on the one guy. But it's like, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, Apparate is there telling him, hey, stop it.
Apparate is like obsessed with the race. He's like, what about the race? You're not in the race anymore. We got to do the race.
Hey, you don't tell me what to do or I'll fucking shoot you, all right?
Yeah.
Now, on to the rest of you. I'm going to shoot up your cars, smash them up, get the windshields, like, shoot all the tires out.
He sets fire to Apparate's car, and Apparate's, stop it. And he's like, hey.
I thought I told you not to do that, not to tell me what to do. And pow, Apparate gets one. Or does he? Because Kosame has stepped in the way of the path of the bullet. It's like, why, Kosame? Why did you do that? I was just doing what I felt like. A lot like you do, Apparé.
I learned it from you. dear.
But it's bad news.
That's a little bit of a damper, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
He's gone off with the train. He's blown up the bridge. They have no cars, no functioning cars.
And he's like, hey, here's the new game. I'm the king of everything. You guys get me, what was the prize for the race? 1.5 million? Or
something like that. It's a weird point, but it's essentially it's 1.5. It's like 1.47 or something. It's whatever the prize money was.
0.51 million.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah, just basically go to the big boss auto companies and just give me the money because the race is over.
Yeah, because his basic moral philosophy is if you want to be a bandit, you don't fucking join a race or get involved with society and progress and shit. You just fucking take what you want. So you get me the fucking money. This is me taking the money.
Yes, because he's disappointed in both that there used to be 7 of the 1,000 outlaws. And now there's only 3, and 2 of them have sold out.
When he's fighting, I think he's fighting TJ, and he has him fucking dead to rights, and he's like, oh, I guess it's the 1,002 now, kind of thing. And I was just like, Jesus, fucking. He seems disappointed that there's less of them now, but also he's just like, I'm totally willing to reduce those fucking numbers.
Yeah,
it's the standard these days.
Yeah,
it's the end of the Old West type story.
Exactly,
the guy
trying to hold on to it.
Yeah.
The person who's trying to stay to the Wild West rather than the modernity that's creeping up on you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fucking, Jesus, it should have been kind of obvious because Kosame, he's kind of got to the apex of his arc there. He's able to draw that sword and actually defend what matters to him. What's he got left to prove? A lot of these other ones do, but it's like, come on, let's sort of race to run. Gotta finish. Let's go.
He looks very dead in the preview, which runs through the credits.
What? Where he's fucking lying in bed with a cloth over his face? Yes. Yeah, a little bit. I'm hoping it's like, oh, hey, Parry, I just can't sleep if there's fucking sun in my eyes. Yes.
I'd be very upset if he's actually dead.
This would be the one situation, or there's a bunch of situations. I'm not generally gone on killing guys and things, but where plot armor, I'm just like, yeah, just give him the plot armor for a gut shot in the fucking 1800s. It's like, no, he can survive this. I'm sure he'll be fine.
The guy going on with, you know, we'll fucking reserve a whole lot of adjustments until like we actually witness next episode with our own eyes, but it seems sure. pretty definitive to me, and yes. it doesn't feel like cheapened or out of nowhere. It's just, this guy's been a bastard. We know he's been a bastard. We know he's been cooking up in the background. And as I said, Kostami kind of, he got his moment of self-actualization 3 episodes back.
Yeah. I won't feel cheapened out if they do bring him back, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And as well, just that little detail where in the last episode, in the previous one, where he's given like the rice balls to a pirate who's fixing the mortar. And it's just, a lot of salt on these. It's just like, ah. So you do care about my cooking and how it tastes. Like, that's the thing. He was able to get through to Apparay in that way. And was, but now there's so much he wanted to say to him. But now, one of the chance.
I think he'll be fine. Because I think, especially, I
love that they did the characters dicking about and hanging out episode right before. It's like, fuck the characters. Yes. Fuck them all. Episode, and it's just like, well, now I really care about all of them.
I mean, it'd be really mean for you to give them the out of him not dying in straight away here, but to say, oh, we've got to get him to hospital.
Yeah,
because I feel like if they wanted him to die, they'd have had him clearly die this episode. I think it then just wanted its cake and eat it, and make you think he died in the preview.
So that's why.
Oh no! I hope that's setting me up. Yeah.
It's in the preview. It's Apparay. I'm thinking of the worst case scenario because he overthinks everything that he does. You know, I think it's everything. It's always in the preview. Nothing in the preview is ever definitive. It could be you're not seeing it in the context of whatever.
The preview's supposed to bring you back next week, as if you fucking weren't going to come back after this episode.
He'll come back as a hybrid Kasami. He'll be steam powered.
You're going to be a cyborg.
I mean, like, I'm not against Apparay just making a fucking mech out of all these cars. I'm fine with that.
The cars would be all taped together end to end. It's like, it's a train, but it's also a car.
Now, did they let Seth... Did we see if they let Seth off the train or not? Or is he also hostage on the train with Sophia?
I don't think he lets a lot of people off the train.
Yeah, I don't think we saw either way.
Didn't see him go off. I presume he needs him because he needs to be the go-between between the gang and Big Boss.
Yes.
Well, I mean, like, presumably he's your main hostage to get the money from the company, as well as Sophia.
Yeah, because obviously with Sophia, they can get the money directly from Al.
Well, I mean, like, they're getting the money from all the sponsors, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next up, of course, a show which... This week's episode of Millionaire Detective says you shouldn't believe people are necessarily dead. Episode 8, Money Burns a Hole in the Pocket, in which we illegally question their detective friend from the previous episode.
I felt a bit weird about that, honestly. But it is like, it's a weird fucking
If you
one.
Don't feel weird about him by now, because you see how it just breaks into a woman's laptop, but just like displays her fucking personal life and details on a hologram projection on the inside of the interrogation room. If you're not feeling iffy about how Daisuke does his work by now, then
And it's out is that the characters are feeling iffy about how the Tokyo Metropolitan Police Force are doing their work.
They have to do it extraditiously because in the thing it's not fucking doing it.
Well, because previously there was a man at the top who was apparently part of whatever the plot is going on, who was then murdered 6 months later, we learn, because he knew too much.
And generally, like, Kanbe would be like, hey, supercomputer, who did the crime? And the supercomputer would be saying, oh, it's this guy. Cool. Now we have him. Let me just spend a lot of money to catch him. But in this case, it's like, hey, supercomputer, can you tell me about my parents? That information is not available, Dave.
Yes.
So we can't... Trust the
police. You can't trust the
supercomputer either. Which when Kozue starts fucking trying to like just do a general Google search on my family, see what it goes.
And that
see,
was it's, funny, it's but I'm just like, oh, that's fucked up.
Actively deleting the results in real time before our eyes.
Yeah.
I was pausing it on that because I was like, I really want to read what the fuck is coming up before it's deleted from the internet forever. And it was something about using like theoretical higher numbers to make infinite power or something. Which, well, I was just like, what? That's crazy. But I guess it fits into the whole you have infinite money because of some sort of theoretical physics, I guess.
Quite possibly. It's gone very science. So essentially the disagreement between Daisuke's parents was over whatever was going on in Lab 3. And the mystery of this episode is, where is Lab 3? How do we get to Lab 3? How do we find out what the mystery is? Meanwhile...
We have as well, like the breakdown of the company structure. I mean, we see like your parents' names here and here, but don't see him anywhere else, or wherever you don't see him here. And there's no mention of his laboratory tree, so it's not on the books.
And meanwhile, Cho is basically trying to break his old partner by not providing him with quite enough security to protect him from whoever he's afraid of.
Oh, it's super fucking dodge, man.
Just, hey, man, just want some whiskey? I know, you've already had some sake. I know I would too, but that's all they got. It's good stuff, though. He's pretty rich. It's probably great.
He's giving out the whole time about it. Like, why do we got to eat all this weird, fancy food? I want to eat Japanese food. I'm exceptionally racist against all this Western food and drink.
So he doesn't know the name, but he's getting these photos. But then is it the butler who he recognizes? That scares the shit out of him.
I was wondering. It's not clear which of the photos.
Because he gets frightened when the meal is delivered by the butler.
Yeah. Mm. And in the climax of the episode, in the ending bit, where the hell is the butler? You know, because isn't it probably also his job to be helping defend the mansion? Because he's more than he seems. We get that. He's not just a butler. Yes. He's probably also a ninja or something. But he's just like, no. You've watched too much anime. He's like a ninja or something like that. He'd probably just be the man you're after. Or close to the man you're after, anyway.
Yes. Because it turns out the man they're after is the man who he was after all the time. He just turns out to be alive, despite the evidence previously.
Yes, it seems to be Shigemaru Kanbei, who was presumed dead. But we got the body from the wreckage. We had the dental records. Oh, dental records, yes. Those things are notoriously faulty as a method of proving the identity of a body or guilt or otherwise.
Or a thing you could probably pay someone off into saying was totally that thing with, I don't know, infinite money. Just a thought, like something you could fix.
Oh, so how old are those dental records? You know, like they could have changed in that time. And how many people was your since we're going around biting? You can compare this against other things. You know, it's riddled with faults.
Yeah.
I saw a documentary about it, just debunking the whole thing.
I did like that when you're once Google searching the company, just on the fly, like, let's just see what fucking information's out there. You can see like the security cam footage. You see a dude with a ski mask walking in the front door of the mansion. I was like, oh shit. Because I went back and I was like, wait a minute. That's important.
I like how all the goofy stuff is there to disarm you before the sinister stuff starts happening. So the goofy stuff is Kato being equipped with the backpack with Suzue's
put this on, put
rocket
these
launcher
on. No
and drone destroying lasers as a distraction while Daisuke breaks into the lab.
We gotta give Kato some credit. He was the one who had to hit the books and actually get him the lead in the thing.
Yes,
he goes in first and he gets all your case files. Kiyomizu, the chief of modern crime, is everyone saying, oh, what are you doing there? Nothing. Nah, you're getting your case files. Here, they're in my locker.
I've been keeping them here for 19 years, and now I'll finally have the fucking space to use again. Which is like, it shows him supporting the guy for years without actually like going like, dude, you're getting obsessed with this case, but it's like, I'm not going to stop you because you're my friend kind of thing.
That's what it's all been about. I just want to get my locker back. Not just murder, but I just want to get this locker back, man. And then bringing out his stats. Stacks and stacks of folders, there's sheets everywhere in Shosuke. It's just like, oh, here's all the stuff I got. The answer is somewhere in here. Well, I gotta go. I'll leave you too.
Yeah, because I mean, it's the physical documents that your man collected over years is one of the things. It's like, okay, you see here on this old listing of your businesses, it was like, here's Lab 3. But then on all the new listings, and he just has like the printouts of, you know, the corporate fucking information kind of stuff. It's like, that one's not on this. It's not on anything from this point on. So it's like, this is physical evidence that you can't erase with, I don't know, a supercomputer who could erase it off the internet, that kind of thing. So you just comb through that for the fucking key goddamn clue.
And he finds a photo, and he wants them to enhance the photo so he can see what's on the badge. And I did like the fact it was like in a world where they've got a virtual reality machine which can trick people into revealing their dreams.
Yeah.
They still cannot enhance any picture data which isn't actually in the picture to begin with.
No, it's reflected on the thing. You can't make it out.
You can't fix bad photography.
But luckily, there's a clue in the background that triggers a memory for Daisuke.
The main clue is like they're both wearing lab coats, so they're probably near a lab or something where you'd wear a lab coat. And what's that very specific mark on the building in the background behind?
That's the summer hall I spent time there as a child. So that's where our hidden lab is.
Mm.
So that leads them there. And yeah, and while they're there, then they get this house invasion by this mysterious masked individual. And
I love your man in the interrogation fucking clear plexiglass room where he's just like, brilliant, reduce security. That'll really get this fucker to talk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We left him like, enough, he's just walking through security. He's just like going like, you just see the little thing moving through the mansion. Like there's a wall, it's gone. There's a wall, it's gone. It was like, okay, that's very bad though.
Yeah, he's using this the higher clearance to just like, you know, just go to a train. It's just like Shiki Marikambu. It's like, you know, that's the call board. It's the voice match. It's eye scans
as well. Yeah,
yeah.
They did set up earlier that you one gave them an out from their panic room. Panic room. Let's call it that. This interrogation.
Well, it's opposite. Well, it's a panic room, but in the sense that it makes you panic a lot more rather than when you go in a panic.
But yeah, she did give him like an escape tunnel just in case they really get stuck. But they decide to go differently with it, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think Cho was always planning on
confronting
the guy just so he knew who it was. And he was trying to arrest him.
It was
well.
Just for his own satisfaction.
Takei is like, he's encouraging Takei to leave, but Takei just pulls on his jacket and he's back to being a proper cop. The pair of them are going to try and take this guy down. And then
because your man doesn't pull out a gun. He pulls out a pair of handcuffs.
Yes.
He's like, I'm taking this guy in, which is nice. For all the dirty cop shit that he's doing.
but Shigemaru pulls out a kitchen knife. And
the
then
very
to...
same kitchen knife that his son watched him kill his mother with. That was a fucked up scene as well, yeah.
Yeah, and it turns out two human bodies contain a lot of blood. You would expect some of Shigemaru's blood to be in there as well. I don't see how he could avoid getting cut trying to fight two men with a knife. Unless it turns out that he's somehow supernaturally good at fighting with knives.
Maybe he has infinite knives.
Oh, maybe it'll turn out this is not Shigemaru. It's somebody pretending to be Shigemaru.
it's the most obvious fucking thing, so it probably isn't. Yeah.
It's so much like things because they don't say it out loud. Because Kozue goes to meet him when he comes out of the lift with the taser, and he's just going, "No, it can't be. It can't be true." But doesn't say out loud that it can't be you. You're Shigemaru Kanbei. And similarly, when Chosuke is facing him down, it's off screen. You can't really see him because you know he's. The lights behind him, this base
he's
is
pulling
being
the balaclava off, but you don't see it. Yeah.
But it's like, it's you all along. I should have known. And, it's like, but it's
and he pulls out the very knife that he killed his wife with. Not like a cool like samurai knife or something, a kitchen knife. It's just like that someone kills someone else with in the heat of a fucking moment.
That's
but it's just like, I don't think that's his weapon of choice, probably.
But a butler might have access to a kitchen knife.
Or might be very good around a kitchen knife.
Yes.
Like, where is this butler while this is going on? Do you step
he
out
isn't in the whole episode. Yeah.
He's bringing it on the meals and things.
Yes, because that's why I think it's the butler, because that's when Takai gets frightened.
Yeah. He's not doing anything in the forefront, I guess, in the episode. Yeah. I did like the stuff with the grandmother, where she's just mixing the tea, and she gets kind of more frantic, where he's kind of questioning her harder with it.
The last time obviously something she frantic did... was when having a very tense conversation with her son years ago.
But Daisuke does see a video of his father at the lab recently. But of course, that could also be doctored, as Daisuke has doctored videos himself as it's happening.
He went to get that too, instead of, if you run back to the mansion right now, you might be able to override security and stop everybody getting killed.
I've located the helicopter so you could get there pretty quick. And, but he, at that stage, he's already hacked through the fucking door and he's like, this is exactly everything I want, though. Behind this door.
Yeah, and I think he also knows that what Cho was doing was everything Cho wanted as well.
But yeah, Donner, Carter was not happy for once. You should have come back. You should have been there, man. It wouldn't have died.
You let it happen. You had the chance to come back and stop it, but yeah.
Something more to it, though. Kiyomizu was just like watching his old buddy get hauled away in the meat wagon. It's just like, oh, he's a little thing. I know. He's his little pair of dice. It's like, Cho-san, you're tenacious to the very end. So I'm wondering how those little dice, is something clue. And
I was going to say, did he only have one dice on him?
There was one dice in the in the little bag.
Yeah. So there's some other, like, something else in there that he's done. Like, it will be anything kind of very high-tech. I was thinking, was there some kind of, like, hidden, like, microphone or a camera? And dice was no, he's a fucking old-fashioned guy. He wouldn't be doing any of that shit. That's Dice Gate's deal. He would have just, like, put it on somebody or left it in some way in a certain place, roll up on a certain number as well, probably to point them the right direction.
It's definitely like the smoking gun being a fucking missing dice or whatever. It's a really smart show. I feel like it's not going like, oh, it's definitely the father. It's like,
it would be unfairly fairly amusing that, you know, they're doing the old thing of the butler did it. I mean, not the butler.
Yes.
But we're still like, how did he do it, though? Because that's really where the interest is.
Yes.
We've got an idea who it is. No, whether it's actually his dad, who faked his dad, or whether it's the butler all along. Those are kind of very obvious things, but the thing is, how does he do it?
The other thing is, it's playing with people who know the novels and the father's role in the novels. Is the other reason. I think it's playing tricks on people who've got that information as well. I hadn't realised until the other week that there was a live-action TV version of it where your millionaire detective was a woman. There's also it's not the same author, but it may be inspired by the other one about it's an Edo set. And I can't remember what the position it is, but it's a guy in the 19th century who's also essentially a millionaire detective.
Okay,
but I'm your detective.
No, it's like a governmental position he's in, but he's also a millionaire.
Okay,
and there's various adaptations of that as well. But it's a different author, but I saw it got linked in the Wikipedia page, and I was like, oh, let's take a look at that. And it's like, oh, there's loads of live-action versions of that.
I'm almost sorry that this show has gotten into the reeds with its cool mystery that it has been working on for a while. Because every time I hear the intro, it's very big, bombastic Bollywood, and it's like, yeah, Millionaire Detective, here for a good time. And it's like, oh, wait, no, we're in the full mystery fucking end of it. It's like, oh, yeah, sorry.
Anyway, let's crack on and get this podcast finished.
Yeah.
My phone made a noise, and I was like, I put it on silent for 2 hours. Why am I hearing you make a noise? Niall, tell us about Healing Good Pretty Cure. Episode 23. What's cute? A Sumi and a puppy.
You're correct. That is what's cute. What is it, Bob? Beep, boop, what is cute? I do not understand. I know what love is, but what is cute? Is it like love? Is it not quite? It's similar, but here, we'll just take it down to the vet then. I'm a senior medical, and I was helping out with her family at that. And we're looking after this adorable foster puppy. His name is Pochito. He's just a little cute little face. And don't you see how cute he is? It's like, that's kind of weird because I love Latte, and she's a dog. She's also like, you know, kind of my master and the thing that's given me existence. But also, I don't feel anything for this other dog. It's just like, well, everybody's got different tastes, you know. So, you know, things you might find cute, others might not find cute. Let's go down to the dog park, and you might see what we mean. And we're sort of kind of like we see some dumb dogs running around. We're bringing Pochito down there because he's just a little foster puppy. He's still very scared around other people and other dogs. We've got to help socialize him. And you kind of just like let him run around. It's like, okay, I think I might be getting the idea. It's like, well, but something is cute. It's just like, it just touches you and loves it so much that you want to protect it. You know, it's just like, it's just kind of feeding inside you. It's kind of difficult to explain, but it's something that kind of brings from person to person. But no time for that. Monster has appeared because it's in the cornfield. Paul Lim was going to have my legs broke. And it's Guayuaru trying to, you know, get some one last go out of his, what do they call him now, evil parts, broken parts, just the gems that make the monster grow big. I've got to make more of these, so I'll just put them in the cornfield, got to harvest them. Good plan, me. But the girls are on the scene that they sorted out like fairly easily. But he's able to bump it up. And it's overpowering them then because the big monster this time. And Guayabara is like attacking the dog part. He's raising terror. And it's like, well, I don't know what you care about these lower life forms. These like indispensable animals. And saying, these are not lower life forms. These are things worthy of our love and affection. Look at little Pochito. He was just so scared of other people and other dogs early on. But now he sees this giant corn monster. He's out there. He's been so cute. He's been so brave. I want to protect him. So this is what cute is. It gives me the resolve to take you out. I kind of make the other girls seem like they're really secondary when Q-Birds can take on the powered up version of the monster all by herself and has been doing so for the last few episodes. Kind of need to bring the rest of the team back in on this one, if you ask me. Yeah, but she understands what cute things are, and that's great. It's I kind of like how like things you might find cute. It's kind of weird how you can get so involved and interested in the thing. Maybe just kind of get kind of fascinated with studying an animal. Maybe you get a weird animal, like say a sloth. It's like, oh, it's kind of crawling around. It's got kind of a weird face. It's got like algae that grows in it, and it's got lice that like live in its fur. I'm interested in it. It's a very fascinating creature. And also, from certain angles, most of them, it looks adorable. So your interest can kind of lead on to how an obsession, and then you can kind of become all about these things, and it has this little like effect on you, where you be kind of maybe... I suppose you become like less self-conscious about something. It's like, oh, it's just so... I just want to hug it. I just want to protect it. As an aside to it... there's a little thing for Hernatic, but she's been helping out fostering this dog at the clinic for a start. And it's not something she would have done normally before. She was very, she's very, like, a bit of a spat, a bit of a ditz. You know, she's always like not quite sure how she can contribute or do it. And didn't feel like she's just like very confident in her own ability, but she's been doing things little by little. Like, well, I've been growing up literally in this veterinary clinic for all my life, and I know how most of it works. So I've been helping out my sister with the dog grooming and also running like the little cafe bit, and been doing stuff for my brother and all the little things around the clinic. And that's something that I wouldn't have done because, you know, I never got friends who would back me up, and, you know, even if I fall down, they'll be out there to help to give me a kind of confidence and courage again, you know. It's just little, like, small little details that, you know, it's just really illustrative of the development they're going through in the background. It can be, you can get kind of sidelined when, like, you know, a big monster turns up, but and that's a big lesson that they learn at the end of the day. But these little small little developmental things that, you know, it's like, oh yeah, this is actually a lot different in your approach. You're still the same, maybe, I suppose. It's, you've matured some a little bit. And that's a nice little thing in there. What is happening next week? I think I forget, but they're going on a lovely picnic. I can't see how it can go wrong.
Giant monster?
Yeah, probably. Mm. But I guess you see a lot of cute dogs in this one. I think they might be finally moving on. We gotta teach this homunculus how to exist in this world. We taught her the two most important things: how to love and how to what cute things are. So she's set for her life. She'll be okay.
You're good.
You're right.
Then let's learn about One Piece episode 940, Zoro's Fury, The Truth About the Smile. I've not watched all of this, only like the last few minutes of it.
Which probably is mostly caught up, yeah.
Which is the stuff covered in the title.
fucking are the titles like that? We just have to keep putting the titles out, and the show is slightly behind because the thing that they put in the title is going to happen next episode.
Yeah,
basically,
it's a bit weird.
Doesn't have a chance to get mad in this episode.
Well, he gets mad at Toko, laughing at her dad's death.
Yeah, yeah, but not like really mad as he's going to. Yeah.
Yes, because he's about to get mad, and then they're like, "No, no, no." The reason they're laughing, the people of Abyssu, is because of the thing that Orochi and Kaido brought into this country. Smile.
The fact that it's smile spelled out in like English letters in the title, and everyone just says smile, you know, rather than
yes,
the Japanese like, thing. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
We're like, we know what that is. We came across that years ago.
Yeah, pretty much.
We thought it was just a stupid name. We didn't know it was going to be like this.
So apart from that, what else happens, Dwayne?
Oh, God.
There's some Ashura Shoji stuff.
Yeah, they add some stuff in, like with Kinemon and Inarashi, like reacting to the video and meeting your man, the bandit. They have like a flashback with Odin and Yasue, which is cool.
Sorry, Ashura Doji. Ashura Shoji, I think, is a character in an entirely different show.
Ashura Doji, like a guy comic.
Yeah, I'm mixing up my shit.
No, I was mixing up my shit. He's Ashura Doji. I was calling him Ashura Shoji. Yeah, I think. I think I am thinking of a character from a Go and a Guy comic. As
too many dojis.
Out. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think Luffy's actually in this episode, is he? No, sorry, you only watched the end of it.
Yeah, the short summary on the wiki is, after claiming responsibility for Kinemon's secret message, saying it was a prank and casting doubt in the Rusetsu prison guards, Yasui meets a brutal end as Orochi and his men shoot him to death.
You wouldn't think that'd take that long, but you'd be wrong. Like, a lot of the him getting blown the fuck away I think it's, like, they kind of do it off-screen and shit, but it's clear, it's like, yeah, this fucker's shot a lot and dead. And here's his screaming daughter watching him fucking die. And the villagers that all love him watching him die. And then they all laugh. And you're just like, well, that's fucked up until you find out why.
Yeah, so it mentions here Luffy and Hiyagaru do not appear fat in this episode. So I guess they are in this episode.
Okay. Yeah, they must have been just reacting to the video, and that's why I'm not remembering.
Yeah,
sure.
They were still fat when the Abyssu town citizens were grieving over Yasui's death. In the comic, they were not here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, it didn't take as long, so.
Yeah, maybe they didn't eat quite so much in the anime. Yeah, you say they mentioned here additional dialogue with Kinemon and Inuyurashi, flashback scene of Odin sparring with Yasui, Kinemon deducing Yasui's intentions, a flashback sequence with Yasui and Toko. And Orochi.
Because the guys who were making their way into town, like Kinemon, like reacting to the things that are happening. Whereas in the comic, presumably they did it off screen, so we get to see it here. That's about the only real addition.
Yeah. Orochi imagines Odin laughing at him when Yasui laughs. That's another addition. And apparently the scene of Yasui getting shot to death is both censored and extended in the anime.
How do you manage that? I don't fucking know. But yeah. They really want to draw it out and draw the tragedy of it. And the show has slowed down to a point, and I mean, like, it's going to get the chop from me, I think, as well. Where you basically watch it every second episode because you'd see what happened in the last episode, which would catch you up, and then the bare thing that happens in this episode, and then what happens next episode. And I was like, okay, I'll skip the next episode, and you're probably caught up again.
Yeah, I think I might hop on in 3 weeks' time.
Sure.
And then hop straight back off again as all the other new shows start.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm keeping up with the comics, so I don't really need to keep up with the show.
Exactly.
As the story moves on more and more again, I know we're due a flashback where this happens all as it does in movies all the time, but it feels like this is something that would be reserved for the flashback backstory tragedies. It's like the big event that, you know, shaped who they are today and traumatized them, but it's been moved far from a flashback. It's happening to our characters right now in real time, in the present.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the flashback and stuff is only going to make that more tragic, basically.
I think this happens, like, more and more, or like, as stories get to the end, towards the end, anyway. So we leave, at least. It's just like, these are traumatic events from another time, from more turbulent time, certainly, but it were already in like what's become an increasingly more turbulent time. So these things aren't just like a kind of in the rear view for you. It's like, yeah, I was sad to have what happened to me, but I'm ruining the face of the future right now. Whereas the future's coming on top of you right now, and people are fucking facing like the consequences of that. So it feels like, you know, it feels like a more clear and present danger. These things aren't reserved just for like the tragic backstory anymore. Since this could happen to characters you've grown to love, perhaps, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, like that. Well, I remember that time when that Birdman got killed by that cannonball, and then later he was all right.
That's always there as well.
That was like the one big one, I think, that people remember. I was like, oh, no, that guy was cool. And then it was like, oh, he's fine. Okay, I mean, yay. Yeah, I like that guy. He seemed okay.
He does not do that as much as he used to. He used to be guilty of that. Having said that, I say the cover story currently involves a character who that very thing did happen to him recently.
But no one, like, his shit's still going badly for him, kind of, and it's really funny. I did like the picture, like, he's like, look, I have photographic evidence, and it has to zoom and enhance on the fucking cover story just because his picture is so inconclusive proof. It's very funny.
His like cherished photo of his family is his wife.
Him getting kicked out
the bedroom door while he's just like microscopic detail. His twin daughters are just snoozing away.
This is amazing.
He get kicked out the bedroom. Get the fuck out of here!
And yet, still not the thing I thought I was going to die laughing at this week in Shonen Jump, which was a single panel in the new comic High School Family.
It was the cat, wasn't it?
It was the cat, yes.
Yeah.
Maze is coming too, don't you know?
Goddamn kill. I was just couldn't. Every time I looked back at it, it started laughing again. I just could not stop. It was.
If the way Shonen Jump is going to survive the eventual death of One Piece by doing comedy stuff, they're off to a fucking great start. Some really good stuff.
There. I suspect all we're doing now is we're getting to see all the comedy stuff, and the comedy stuff was always there. Because the guy who's doing High School Family, his last strip ran for 16 volumes, which is why I laugh at all these people who go, oh, it's going to get cancelled really quickly. It's like, mate, do your research before firing off a stupid thought?
I mean, like, just the premise alone, I'm just like, that's going to fucking... That there's loads of legs on that. And with each individual member of the family or the unit as a whole, fucking, you're sorted. Yes,
and eventually... He starts running out, you add grandmother and grandfather come in.
Yeah. Just because you may not come to Shonen Jump to read this, you can't read One Piece, you can't read Black Clover, you can't read some kind of action comic. And what's all this comedy shit doing in here? Well, your action comics are still there as well, pal.
Exactly.
It's all right. That's grand. Don't worry about it. It's supposed to be for a lot of different people here, a lot of different tastes.
And as he's learning from Mashal, let a comedy comic run long enough, it'll slowly turn into an action comic.
Yeah. That's a little bit of a... Well, I didn't say that's bad action either, but it's just straying further and further away from One Punch Man, but it's in Harry Potter world. Anyway, this is all stuff we usually do...
After the podcast.
That's true, actually. Yeah,
but yes, that's fine. I was going to talk about High School Family regardless, because, god damn it, I love that comic. But we'll be back next week with more of this. We really will send this podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.